He's one of India's finest artists, somebody who's been recognized in India and around the world. He's won 3 Grammys this time around, which is exceptional, even by his incredible standards. We're very privileged to be joined by Ustad Zakir Hussain. Sir, thank you very much for agreeing to do this interview, spending some time with us. Now, you've won 3 Grammys this time, including Best Global Music Performance. You've been honored around the world, but 3 Grammys, is this, in a sense, a crowning achievement?
Well, I don't know if it's a crowning achievement. It's definitely, I would say, a landmark moment for India. I feel that, you know, this is an honor that we were able to represent India. And it's just not me alone. My colleagues, Rakesh Chaurasia, Shankar Mahadevan, Ganesh Rajgopalan, Selva Ganesh, Vinayakaram, all winning. We collectively brought 8 Grammys to India, which is, an achievement that has not been done before. And so it makes us very, very proud filling us with pride that we were able to fly the Indian flag in the bastion of Western music, which is the Grammy Academy, and to have India represented in such strength on that day.
Shakti, your 50-year-old music band has won the Best Global Music Album Award in the Grammys this time for the pandemic creation, This Moment. It's an incredible achievement. When did you decide to make the album, and what really is the message?
We were talking about making an album in a studio, which we had not done for 45 years. And John and I were, really keen that we should get into a studio and record an album, because making a live album is something very different. You play a concert, it's recorded, and it's released. So it's one time pass, and it's done, and then hopefully it turns out great. And without any airbrushing of it, it gets put out. But with a studio album, you get to reflect on the music that you're putting down. You get time to be able to, chip and chisel, sculpt it the way you would like it to be, and, use the technology, use the processing, make it sound just right, and make, have time to spend on doing something special. And so we wanted to do that, and then pandemic arrived, and so we were not able to be in a studio together. But the technology is such these days that we could be in our respective homes or personal studios and be able to communicate by Zoom and some other software which some engineer came up with, which I don't even know what it was. And we were able to actually interact on Zoom and be able to guide each other and help each other decide on what to put on the record, what to print. And so it was, in fact, an involved process that we went into together, but from different parts of the world. And thanks to the technology, we were able to make this happen. We were able to spend time, quality time, on being able to make the album. And the result was This Moment. And while we were doing the record, Abstract Logic, the record company's owner, Shovik Datta, who's also John's manager or road manager, pointed out to us that by the time the record comes out, it's going to be 50 years that John and you, Zakir, have been playing together. And so that is a landmark moment. So we were not aware that we were approaching that 50 years of our relationship, that this kind of time had elapsed, and we hadn't even noticed that it had gone out, gone through in a blink of an eye. And so it was really something very special the day Shovik mentioned it to us. John and I just kind of looked at each other, and there was a huge smile on our face, and we just hugged each other and just thanked our lucky stars that 50 years down the road, we were still friends, we still loved each other, we were still making music together, and the kind of love, affection, and energy that was in our music 50 years ago still appeared and manifested itself in this new combination with Shankar Mahadevan, Selva Ganesh Vinayakaraman, and Ganesh Rajagopalan.
So Shakti took shape in 1973. Initially, it was a two-person group. It ended up being, what, four people? It was always about melding the musical sensibilities of the East and the West. How has the love of rhythm defined each and every member of your group?
I don't think that diverse musical backgrounds are in any way a hindrance, especially if the people involved have an open mind. A mindset is the thing. If you're open to discussion, if you're open to interaction, if you're open to ignoring any kind of invisible or superficial fences and borders, then a conversation can be had. And when I say conversation, I mean music, because for me and for all of us, playing music is talking, is having a conversation, but instead of words, we use notes and rhythms. It's interesting, if you were to be in a dressing room of musicians, you will see them sitting around a cup of tea, just kind of shooting the breeze, talking, I just bought a new cell phone, or I saw this movie, or I'm reading this book, or so on, or my daughter is doing that, or my son is doing that. And this conversation goes on, no attention or any focus is paid on whatever it is that we're going to be performing on the stage. But then we get on the stage, we've already gotten so intimate with each other in our conversations and have become aware of each other's moods at that moment, that the conversation just continues and the language changes and the vocabulary changes to melody and rhythm. And so that's what is important. If you can transcend any issues, if you were to approach the music and say, well, I'm a tabla player, so I will play my tabla compositions and you guys have to adjust to it, then the whole attempt is a loss. It's a failure. But if you're open to just using the instrument to be able to interact and support and do whatever is needed to make the final statement appear valid and positive, then music can be made. So the diversity was never an issue. What was interesting was to be able to find unity in our diversity.
How was your father, Ustad Allah Raha, a part of the musical journey of Shakti?
Well, John McLaughlin, who was basically the driving force in putting Shakti together, was studying with Ravi Shankarji and of course my father, because they were both together at that time. Ravi Shankar and my father were traveling and performing together as a group, as a duo. And John was interested in learning about Indian music, so he approached them and he learned from them. So that energy was already injected into John's mind and heart. And at the same time, he went to Wesleyan University in Connecticut to study Veena and Carnatic music. So all those elements were already being injected into John before he came in contact with me and El Shankar, the violin player at that time, the original member of Shakti, and Vikku Vinayakaramji. So when he approached us, he was already into what you may call the Indian state of mind. And the original Shakti was something that was entirely possible because John, as a guitarist, was able to cross over to our way of thinking and play with us like as if he was an Indian musician. We were not yet ready or equipped to be able to totally transcend over our fences in our mind and be able to interact with John, moving into his world. That came later. As we made our second and our third record, we were able to get that going. But it definitely finally arrived and culminated in this incredible crossover of each of our traditions in the new record, this moment, where we were able to really experience each other's world in an in-depth experience. And so that happened. So my father and Ravi Shankar and were definitely the, in some ways, what you may call the seed force in being able to get Shakti going on the road. And they were actually quite supportive of the band. I remember Ravi Shankarji coming to see us play in London when we performed, and he sat in the front row for the whole concert and applauded, and then came backstage and blessed us. And my father, when we played in Central Park in New York, a live concert, came and stood in the wing for 2.5 hours as we played, and you know, in the end gave me a hug and pat on the back, and the one thing he said was, "This is good, but don't forget you are an Indian classical tabla player."
And since you do speak about Ustad Saab, how do you compare and contrast your style and technique with that of your father, Allah Rakha? Is there anything he could do on the tabla which you cannot?
Absolutely, I still cannot. After about 60 years of attempting to do it, I think somewhere like 20 years down the road, while I was playing, we actually played a concert, and one of his friends and a fan, of course, came to him and said, "Oh, Khan Saab, you play beautifully, and your son, he plays exactly like you." And my father said, "Oh, I hope not. I hope he doesn't play like me, because playing like me, that's already done. I have already done it. He's got to do something more, something different, something unique, take it a step further." And that was, you know, in a way, a roundabout signal to me saying, "Son, you know, find your vocabulary, find your way to be able to tell this story. The way I tell the story is already done." So in that sense, at that time down the road, my what you may call failing attempt to be able to sound like him, to play like him, it was a relief to realize that I did not have to do that. So I tried after that to be able to use all the stuff that he had taught me, but to be able to utilize it and present it in the way that I see it, and speak the vocabulary in the way that I read it. And so that's how it has been over the years. And then all these incredible influences that had come my way, listening to Indonesian gamelan or a Japanese koro drum or Puerto Rican conga drummer or Afro-Cuban bata drums or djembes from Senegal and so on and so forth, or boderon from Ireland and all that. And it has kind of given me an insight into a rhythmic technology, an organic rhythmic technology that I have been able to incorporate onto my tabla.
Now, you've said that you do not play at private gatherings, corporate events or weddings. Do you believe that the purity that you seek in your art can best be preserved in this way?
I don't think I do this mainly to maintain purity of the music. It is more about trying to bring an audience into the concert halls. I feel that if I'm going to do private concerts and weddings and stuff, people who have seen me there, in their mind it's like, "Oh, I've already seen him, so I don't have to go to a concert hall." So what that does is that kind of in some ways undermines what a concert promoter is trying to do, is bring the music to the concert halls for a layman audience. He's not able to get sponsorships and he's not able to get support, because in private and corporate events, when musicians play there, then the corporations don't need to sponsor a concert in a concert hall for audiences to go and listen. So that was one of the reasons. And the second reason, obviously, is that when you're going to a wedding and music concerts are happening there, the music is a secondary element or even third element of the event of the evening. The wedding, then the bar and the buffet or whatever becomes the main event, and the music is like, okay, it should be one of the things that people, if they want to go and hear, happens. So in that sense, the focus is not on the art. So that's the other thing. And the third thing is, when I'm playing a concert and I go on stage, I feel I'm in a spiritual environment. I'm in a very clean, pristine environment, and I'm in the presence of say Lord Ganesha or Goddess Saraswati and all the great maestros that have gone before and blessed us with this art form, and Lord Shiva and whatnot. So if that is the feeling that I want to approach my music with, it is not possible to do that in a corporate event or in a wedding and stuff like that. So these collective thought processes is what makes me want to only play concert halls. Nothing to do with the purity of the music being in any way diluted.
Ustad Saab, it's been wonderful speaking to you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and congratulations on the 3 Grammys.
Thank you ever so much.